Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And we are your metal nerds here. I am Mo. This is the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast over here. But more importantly, we are joined by a man, lead singer for Westworld, TNT, some time with Skid Row, and now he has a new album out from his project, Starbreaker, titled Dysphoria. This is Tony Harnell.
Hey guys, pleasure. How are you?
Well, I'm terrific, because I'm talking to Tony Harnell. This is a pleasure for us.
It was funny that in the intro you said Westworld first, and instead of TNT, that was unique.
You know what? It's probably you want me to do it again?
I mean, I think a lot of people are going to go, huh? Like, you know, I think the obvious would be to put TNT first, probably. That was the first time ever I've heard that. So,
well, that's good. That's the way we like to do it.
I mean, maybe just for recognition purposes. yeah.
Right. On the website, we'll put TNT first.
it's what most people are gonna, you know, unfortunately or unfortunately, it's the tag I'm stuck with for the rest of my life. So,
well, I love the Westworld stuff. So there you go.
So do I. So I wish that was actually a bigger thing, so you could say that first and it made sense. But anyway,
you know what? That's actually probably it. Brett had mentioned to me, you know, how much he liked the Westworld. He had listened to it. So I was listening to it right before we got in the air, checking it out again, because it's been actually, honestly, a few years since I listened to that. And so, I think that's really why it was most on my mind.
Sure.
Though, of course, I mean, also listened to the new album this morning and you know, we're very excited to talk to you about it, because I feel like as a songwriter, you're getting your message across better than ever. And also as a singer, you're able to convey your message better than ever, which is two totally different things. But I wonder if you could actually kind of touch on both of those topics.
You know, I just think, thank you, first of all, for the compliments. I think that, you know, I dare say that with age and experience, probably comes often, maybe not always, but often comes a better result. You know, I never think about it too much. That's just something, you know, I don't like when people start to try to tell me how to think about something I've been doing for a long time. When it comes to music, I'm open to growth for sure, and I want to learn more. I always want to learn, but I don't like to analyze what I already do, because I can always get better at what I do for sure, but what I do works. And I don't think. I mean, that's a big, whenever I start thinking, it's when I run into problems with my art. And so whenever that's happening, when I'm trying to create something, I just take a walk or a drive or whatever it takes to get my head back wrapped around the creative process, which is kind of just letting things happen from, you know, just being a channel, you know, and letting it come out. So,
well, you know, I'm also not good at thinking, so we have that in common.
Not exactly what I meant, but
yeah. Well, Tony, you know, because with the new Starbreaker album, it's got, and I think it's the same thing with the other Starbreaker albums, is that every one of them has a different sound. So, you know, what is it in the case of the new one? Like, is that just kind of a product of the fact that it's years later and you're doing a new one, so therefore it's just everything gets updated in the process?
Yeah, and actually, you know, what I will say is I think this is the best production of the three. I think this is the best sounding Starbreaker album. You almost said Westworld.
Got
that's
you
all
doing
your
it.
Fault. That's all your fault. I think it's the best sounding of the three, which is great, because I think the other two are great albums. And I think the one thing that Magnus and I were a little disappointed with was the mix or the production elements of the first two. But this one is the first one we're both like, ah, finally, we have a great sounding album to go with the songs, you know, because you spend all this time writing these songs and you certainly want the sound that people hear to be a good sound, you know, technically a good sound, but to deliver what you've done in the best possible way. So from that standpoint, I think it's definitely a difference. Otherwise, I think it's just, you know, the first album, there were other players involved and a different producer. The second album was done a little differently than the first one, both from the standpoint that Magnus and I got together in person to write some of the material, and but we had a different guy mix the record in the end, and this one is another different way that we did it. We went about it. So the whole thing this time was done long distance, but we did do some writing on Skype, and we had a fantastic guy mixing it in the end. Simone, I won't try to say his last name because I will screw it up, but he's a brilliant Italian producer who took all of our tracks and did a wonderful job mixing. So there you go. And of course, from the standpoint of the songwriting, you know, I would assume that as time goes on, there are differences probably with a little bit with Magnus's approach to his craft and, of course, to mine, you know, both with my lyrics and with my singing, there's always going to be some kind of change, you know, when the years, it's been 10 years after all, since the last one. So life happens and in various ways. And I guess that's reflected on the record, too.
It's 10 years. Is that just a byproduct of the difficulty it is to, you know, get together when you're both busy and doing different projects? Is that why it took so long?
Probably one of the reasons. I don't know how urgent we were feeling about doing another one. I suppose it was always sitting there in the back of our minds. I love working with him. So, it was a no-brainer. I actually had started out in 2016 with this record as an idea. And then I went back to TNT for a while. And we all know how that ended up in, 2017. So when that came to a close, I went pretty much, not immediately, but this came up on my radar. And I started working in earnest, I would say, at the very tail end of 2017.
Do you think there'll be any effort made to tour with this album?
Yeah, it's a common question. And I mean, after three records, you would think we would eventually. I mean, Magnus does not like to tour because he likes to stay home with his family. But he is open to doing, you know, some festivals and short tours here and there. So I'm you know, encouraged by that. And I think we should get out and do at least some short tours and some festivals in the summer, perhaps. I don't know if we'll make it in time for this summer. Probably something we should have looked at earlier. But I think, you know, I'd love to do another album. And but, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself. We're just talking about this one's not even out yet. So. I think that would be great. And I think people would love to see that. When I go out, though, as a solo artist, which I will be doing, I'm sure I'll play some Starbreaker songs since I've co-written them all.
Yeah, because I was watching some of your appearances on the Monsters of Rock cruise and stuff like that overall, you know, on YouTube. And it's, you know, the depth and breadth, I guess, of the songs that you play is really quite astronomical.
Mm.
You must Thank have you. A ton of stuff in your head.
Both with my songs and outside of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a lot of quote stuff going on in my head. That's for sure. You know, there's a lot of songs over the years that I've put out, and of course I play covers as well in my acoustic show, especially. I'd like to keep the show as diverse as possible. You know,
do you ever have like when you're thinking of what the new album is going to be or what you're going to work on next, is it kind of like something that you've got planned in your head, or is that just kind of a whatever you fall into next?
Well, since I haven't really done a proper solo album, which I still plan on doing, then if it's a collaboratory thing like Starbreaker or previous things I've done, then it's kind of a no-brainer. I just sort of feed off of the energy of the other person, and I guess the other person feeds off of mine. And that's what the beauty of a collaboration is. You don't have to think quite as much. Whereas if I set out to do a solo album, I'm going to kind of map out in my mind, or try to map out in my mind at least a rough idea of what I'd like it to sound like, and try to get the writers and the players to help me deliver that.
Is there ever a different Tony Harnell live for each band, or is it always like the same Tony Harnell?
I don't know if there's a same Tony Harnell each day sometimes, but you know, well, I don't know. I think, that's a good question. I think if I perform hard rock, I suppose that my performance is relatively similar from project to project. I guess it depends. But when I do an acoustic show, it's a totally different animal. I mean, it's more of an intimate thing where you're really interacting with the audience more, probably joking around more, and a little more interactive from that standpoint. And the electric show is just more of a, you know, you're usually up high on a bigger stage, and so there's a little separation both, spiritually and musically, so that you're kind of talking to the audience, but you're not going to get into the same kind of little tidbits you might get into when you're in a smaller venue up on a stool with an acoustic guitar. You know, it's a completely different animal.
Given that, do you have a different, I don't know, a pre-concert, you know,
ritual?
Warm-up? Yeah, ritual. Is it different, or is it kind of the same? Do you have one at all even?
I do have a ritual, and I get really, really crazy when I get thrown off of it. But, you know, sadly, I don't always get to, you know, I try to have situations where I can, you know, when I can control my pre-show ritual, I'm pretty regimented with it. And it's usually about a 3-hour lead up to the show that starts off with dinner, because I like to be, you know, have energy and not be hungry, and have enough time from separated from the meal that I don't have, you know, food rolling around in my throat, you know. So I need time to get that, you know, digested, but still get the energy from it. So usually I'll start with a meal and then roll into, after maybe a half hour or so, get into a warm, starting the warm-up process, which if I have that 3-hour window, let's say 2 hours from when I'm actually back into a private space from the time I've eaten, I'll start to warm up my voice. And I do it slowly when I have time. I'll warm up over a really long period of time, very slowly, working in the muscles and the tone. And if it's a rough night, the warm-up will be gentle and long, really long. And if I know it's a good day vocally, then it'll be a shorter warm-up.
Was it always kind of that ritual, or is that just something that you developed over time?
It's always been similar, because when I was 18, I started taking voice lessons after having sung professionally for about a year, year and a half, at least a good year. And, I just was looking to improve some things. And from going to my teacher, it sort of changed a few things with the idea of even warming up the way that I did, and having a certain routine in place, and learning about things like when to eat and those sorts of things, and what to eat, you know, it's another issue. So I've been, you know, there have been times where it's just not possible to get my perfect routine together, which rattles me, I must say, but I've learned to try not to let it get to me too much, you know.
Yeah, I can.
Go ahead, Brad.
I was just going to say, I can well imagine with the smaller venues that sometimes it must be a challenge to find an actual place to be alone.
Well, normally what I try to do, and it usually 90% of the time it works out, I'll have a hotel room not too far away from the venue, and I'll do most of my preps, my getting into whatever clothes I'm going to wear, and doing my warm-ups and so forth in a private location, which probably makes the people that are staying in the hotel crazy, especially when we have a later show, you know, and the warm-up kind of goes into the, you know, 10 o'clock or something or later. But yeah, and then I'll normally do a little more when I get to the venue. I'll, you know, duck into a bathroom or something and get some last minute warming up in before I go out.
It sounds like you would really, you know, got a lot out of your lessons. Is it something you would recommend to every young singer?
Well, and not only did I get a lot out of my lessons, but I got a lot out of the years of doing what I do and figuring my own voice out, because everybody is a little different. And, you know, there are health challenges as well that pop up that you have to work around, whether it be you suddenly get a cold or you've got something going on or allergies or, you know, I mean, any number of things come up and you need to work your voice out a little more than you might normally. So, you know, these are all challenges and things that you learn as you go along. And, but yeah, I got very lucky. My mother found, an incredible teacher who really didn't have much of a name. His father had a bigger name when I started going to him, and now he's, probably, I would say one of the top most sought after teachers in the world. I mean, his roster, when I started with him, I wasn't aware of anybody really famous that was going to him. I think Joan Lynn Turner studied with his dad, and now he's got everybody from Lady Gaga and Christina Aguilera and Bono to people like Mick Jagger. He's had Sebastian Bach in the past and Bon Jovi for a short period, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. So.
Well, that's a pretty good list.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some talent there.
Yeah.
Just a little, yeah. Huh?
Some of those guys got a future, I think.
Yeah.
Tony, now, do you play any instruments? And if so, like, is there a desire to, like, work harder at that or do that? Or is it just about the voice?
Yeah, there's always been. I played a lot more guitar when I was younger. And when I got into TNT, it was sort of I don't know what I think Ronnie, you know, I wanted to absorb and learn from him. And he wasn't the most willing teacher. I don't know if he didn't want me to, you know, play a lot or whatever the case was, but I kind of started playing less and less as time went on. But I still play. I keep threatening to practice more. And I never quite, you know, really get to it. I have written quite a few songs on guitar, but I really don't play well. But I'd like to change that still, even at my age. I'd like to, get to the point where I can. But I understand music, I guess, intuitively, even though I don't read it or write music. I think I feel like I have a pretty good handle intuitively, which allows me to write the melodies. I write and sing the harmonies that I write and build the kind of harmonic melodies that I build over chords when I'm writing with somebody. so I'm lucky that I have good instincts and good ears. I just really wish I knew sometimes what I'm doing. But
well, yeah.
Ronnie used to joke that he didn't want me to learn about music too much because he thought my instincts were really good and that I broke rules that somehow worked. In other words, things that a schooled musician might avoid doing, I would do freely and make it work. And he thought that was interesting. So he didn't want me to lose that, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Because you've worked with so many excellent guitarists. I mean, from Ronnie, of course, to Magnus is amazing. Bumblefoot.
Yep. Al Petrelli.
So, yeah, I mean, you can't help but pick up some stuff. What's the difference between all of them, like personality wise and the mentality of the guitarist?
That's a loaded question.
They're all lovely people.
they actually are. I mean, the cliche of the singer guitar player friction is, from my experience, is true. But I will say that the most success, even guitar players I might have some friction with outside of the music, generally speaking, I've had pretty good good relationships with all the guitar players that I've worked with. And Mark Reale, we didn't mention, from the Westworld Records, who's famous for the band Riot, who's sadly not with us anymore, but also brilliant. And, you know, these are guys who, some are more generous than others. So, like, for example, the four that we've mentioned, and there have been a few others, but those are probably, there's another guitarist I work with in Sweden named Stefan Altsar that I've done quite a bit of solo work with, and a couple New York guitarists as well. They all are pretty generous, meaning they understand how I work, and they really allow me to do what I do with them. And of course, in the context of all of that, I would say Ronnie can be great and very generous when he's not being overly controlling. But you know, for the most part, when we're working and we get into a groove, he feeds off of what I do, and he really loves to collaborate with me in particular. And when I'm not in the band, he likes to take over and write most of the material himself. So that says something. I would say out of all the guitarists I've worked with, the Mark Reale from Westworld was probably the most generous and easy to work with. Just great. You know, we would sit down and really get into something. And when we got into a zone, you know, we always had pretty amazing results. So, but you know, outside of the music is often where sometimes you can run into some tricky things.
Yeah. What do you think of the release of the live album, the TNT One Night in Milan live album? Yeah.
The encore, yeah.
Yeah.
What do I think of it? Well, how do you mean?
Well, just
The fact that it's coming out, or
yeah. I mean, ultimately, yeah,
was it a great performance? Do you feel that that's a you know, if you were to choose a live album, is that the performance you'd go with?
You know, I don't even know how to answer that honestly right now, since it's several months away from being released. I don't think it's good for me to answer that question. I think the best thing for me to do is say that I'll say no comment for the time being, because I don't want people to, you know, feel that they can't get it or shouldn't get it for any reason. It's done. It's going to come out. It's packaged. And my job is to, you know, I'm under contract to, you know, help sell it. So,
okay.
Until it's been out for a while, I don't want to really give any detailed opinions on it. I think people who love TNT will love it. So,
okay, we absolutely respect that.
Thanks.
Yeah, because I'm noticing that you're promoting it on Facebook and on Twitter and stuff like that. So yeah,
I would promote anything that's well, for the most part, you know, I suppose. You know, it's another piece of work that's coming out. You know, I've got Starbreaker that I'm mainly focused on at the moment because it's a new original music and it's something I'm super proud of. You know, whereas the other thing is, you know, it's more of a nostalgic thing, isn't it? You know, it's new, but it's the old songs, you know, so, you know, there you go.
Yeah. What made you finally decide to record the Priest Starbreaker for this album?
I don't know. You know, I think it was something that may have come up earlier in during previous records, and we started to talk about doing a cover song, Magnus and I, and I just thought, well, let's just, you know, that would be obvious and kind of cool if we can pull it off, because I am a notorious Priest fan, and I've never... I don't think I've ever recorded a Judas Priest song on a record. So I thought this would be, you know, a great, that would be the perfect song to do. So, so we said, well, you know, if we don't like how it comes out, we won't put it on the album. And, I got the, once we decided to do it, I got the music for Magnus pretty quickly. And, you know, knowing that stuff like the back of my hand, I was excited and immediately put it up and nailed the, you know, the vocal pretty fast and sent it back to him. I said, what do you think? And he's like, yeah, yeah, this is great. So there you go. I think it came out pretty well, and I'd love, you know, I'd love Rob to hear it and see what his opinion of it is. You know, he'll probably hate it, but.
You know. Have you ever met him?
I have once. Yeah. I've seen them several times, and I've seen some classic, amazing concerts back in their heyday, which I wish my memory could absorb the concerts a little bit better, because I saw some incredible. I saw them in 79 on the Unleashed in the East tour opening for Kiss. I saw them headline on the British Steel tour in New York City at the Palladium, and the year after that. So I saw them as they were sort of starting to get big in the U.S. and so that was pretty lucky. And then I've seen them, and then we played with them at Sweden Rock Festival in 2004 when he just came back to the band, and that's when I met him for the first time. And then I saw them again a couple years ago in Brooklyn.
I think we saw them in, what was it, 05, 06, Brett?
Yeah.
Amazing. 2004. Oh, you guys saw them.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. Saw them, yeah, it was 05, 06. Yeah. Yeah, they're absolutely incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think of the of what's going on with KK and the band, you know, and kind of versus the band right now?
I don't know. You know, I try to, like, you know, it's not judge those things too much, because I've been in those situations, and I can't stand. I really, and I probably came to feel this way over time, because I'm sure I was probably joining in when I was younger, but I've come to realize that I've had so much false information or even, look, we all probably know that even slightly false information or half false information can be harmful. And unless you were actually there and know the intricate details, I'm not sure that anybody should really have an opinion on it. Look, the book is out. I did read some of it. It comes off kind of, well, for one thing, I hate to say it, because I'm such a huge fan of every member of that band, and I love KK, and I appreciate his playing and writing tremendously, what he's contributed to the history of the band. It comes off a little, I don't know. I don't think the writing is great, but I don't even think he wrote it. But I think it comes off a little bitter, which may be justified, but I don't know. I can't speak on it, you know, because I wasn't there. So what I think of it is, you know, it's a shame. But I did see them live, and I can say, you know, his replacement is Richie is phenomenal. I mean, he's ridiculous. He's so good. He's kind of a weird, interesting cross between KK and Glenn, actually, and an incredible asset to the band going forward. However long they plan on doing that, I think they really got quite a gem there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's so interesting, because KK and Glenn were just, you know, so very different in their own way, and that's one of the things that made Priest just so special was having the two of them together. But you know, that being said, their new album is really good. So
yeah.
So you know, back to Starbreaker, I'll tell you that like, Wild Butterflies is my my favorite track off the album.
Yeah, me
well,
too,
then,
actually.
Then you'll be happy, because that's the next single, and the lyric video, I just saw it, and it's probably one of the best lyric videos I've ever seen, and it's really beautiful, and I can't wait for people to hear that song and the whole record, you know. And yes, there's a reason why it's the second song. I've always felt that when you listen to an album, song one is to get your attention, which I think Pure Evil definitely serves that purpose.
Yeah.
And I always feel like song two is probably the most important song on the record. It's to me, it's always the song that needs to set the pace. It needs to, oftentimes I think you'll find if you look back through history, the second or third song on the album is generally the single or the big single. So yeah, it's number two for a reason. It was definitely, it might have started the album had it not been for the fact that we had a song like Pure Evil to just, you know, kind of punch people in the face and say, here's the record. And then song two is kind of like, all right, here we go. You know, like now we have, it's almost like this Pure Evil is almost like an intro song. And then now here's the, what the record's going to sound like, you know, in a sense. That's not to say that I don't think Pure Evil is a good song, because I do. And I think the lyrics and the whole attitude of it are great. It's just, you know, but it's a one dimensional in your face knockout punch type of song. Whereas Wild Butterflies is has a lot of color and depth to it. So
I think that actually makes Wild Butterflies even more effective though, because it's coming after that one. So it definitely, the shift is what made me stand up and take notice of it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It needed to be basically the, like I said, sort of the start of the record. So I see Pure Evil as like the intro smack, and then, okay, here we go, you know, and this is what the record is going to be like. And more importantly, here's a great song for you, you know, to listen to. But yes, it's probably, I love How Many More Goodbyes as well. I think those are, I like a lot of songs on this record. In fact, I hadn't listened to it in a while, and I was just kind of revisiting some of the other songs. And, you know, I feel really good about the whole album. But yes, there's a reason why Wild Butterflies was chosen as the song to accompany the actual release of the album. So,
what do you think, how easy is it for you to listen to yourself and past performances?
That's a good question. It's weird, you know, when you finish, when you're, well, for me, it's really weird because I'm producing myself quite a bit, lately, my own vocals. And, that's quite a strange thing to do. I mean, it's not something I think people were doing back in the old days, so to speak. And really not even, I mean, I guess a lot more people do it now. It's just very weird. It's a strange thing to do because you're worried about the, once you get the sound worked out, which mine is worked out pretty well and it stays the same, you know, I don't really change a lot once I get it the way I like it. But you know, you're critiquing yourself kind of as you go, and yet you're trying to create art. So it's an interesting kind of thing where you're wearing two heads, maybe three, as you're laying down the vocals. You're worried about, you know, you're being an engineer, you're also being a producer, and you're being a singer, you're being an artist. So it's I mean, all three are artists, but you know, it's a very strange thing to do. So once you get done with all of that and you're critiquing it and you let the final product sort of go into someone else's hands, it's got to meet certain criteria. So there's a lot of listening and a lot of critiquing, a lot of little details that go into that before I let those tracks go from my hands into someone else's. So once that's done, then I'm excited to hear the final product and the mix, of course.
Has that process I'm sorry, go ahead. I thought you were done.
No, and then you listen to the mixes until you get those right, and then you sort of enjoy the final product for a little bit, and then you're really sick of it, you know, for a while, you know, and then you need some time so you can come back to it and sort of appreciate what you've done. And that's what I was just, I mean, people don't realize this record's been done for a while, so so I haven't really listened to it for a long time, for months, and so is it weird? I don't like if I walk, into a place and I hear one of my songs, or It's a strange experience. It's one of pride and embarrassment for me, you know, simultaneously. For some reason,
it doesn't sound like it's gotten easier over the years. I would have actually kind of thought it would have, you know, but it sounds like it's still as difficult to kind of listen to yourself as ever.
No, I mean, I'm okay with it when I'm actually in the process of creating the art, because I can be like, I think putting on the production hat and the engineer hat allows me some space from the artist, and almost like two or three sides of my brain pushing the artist side. And I'm always pleased when I listen back and it's working. In the very end, when I hear the mix and I say, oh, I did a pretty good job putting all that together, because I'm not always sure till I hear the end product. And then, you know, often I go, oh, I should have done this or I should have done that. But that's always been the case. I've never finished a record where I say, you know, I missed something. You know, I should have added this or not done that. Sometimes it's too much. Sometimes you wish you would have taken something out, or, you know. So it just depends.
Yeah, a lot of artists nowadays seem to be going back and re-recording albums and you know, trying to do it again. You know, it seems a little odd to me, honestly.
Yeah, I would never do that. People have asked. I mean, it could be a cool thing for example, for TNT to do that from a financial standpoint. But I would never, ever. I mean, live albums, there's enough. There's so much live stuff we've done. You know, even going back to the first live record, which was and DVD, which was 89, and then another one came. I mean, there's been so many that's enough, you know. The idea of going back and trying to, in any, especially for a band like us, to go back and try to capture a moment in time, which is what a record is. A record is a musical snapshot. It's no different than a photograph. And for people to think that an artist can recapture a moment in time is crazy. There's no way you could ever capture that. You're talking about influences of the day, meaning where your brain was at at that moment in time, what was going on, how the technical things that were happening, you know, in the studio, the producer that was there, the things you chose to do vocally or musically or whatever, or the song, the lyric choices you made, all of it. And even, let's face it, the changes in your, whether it be that you're a guitar player or a singer, the changes in your, you know, instrument, and all those things will come into play. And I would never want to, whether I thought it was wonderful or not, there are a few things I wouldn't mind re-recording. And I think I've done a few things on the Mercury Train album I did, that I re-recorded some stuff that I actually like better than the original versions, but they were different though. They weren't setting out to duplicate. So I think setting out to duplicate something that you did 20, 30 or 40 years ago is crazy. I don't know. I know why people do it, but I think it's crazy.
You know, it actually is interesting to listen to you talk about that, because I'm often fascinated how many bands' best album is their first or second album, when they have the least experience in the studio and they have the least, experience songwriting. And yet that's the moment that most captures their pure sound.
Sometimes there are a lot of exceptions to that rule. But yeah, I think that is often the case, especially with a lot of the 80s bands. You know, that's probably why there wasn't a lot of longevity with most of the 80s hard rock acts. But I think that's to do with the excitement of making the first and second album. Look, the first album, you're like, wow, we're making an album. The second album, if you're lucky, you had some success on the first one. So the second one's like, okay, we have something to prove, you know. And then if that goes well, who knows? You know, from there, it depends on the band. In the case of the bigger bands, like from that era anyway, I mean, I can go into a lot of other eras, but in the case of the 80s, I would say Def Leppard and Bon Jovi and maybe Motley Crue were some of the exceptions to that rule, where they tended to put out their better records as time went on, you know.
No, that's true. Actually, when you put it that way, that's true.
But you know, in the case of Def Leppard, they took a lot of years between albums, but it paid off, you know, it paid off for them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, system that that Def Leppard used to spend like so much time, like producing and really like, it almost felt like overproducing albums for sure.
Yeah. And it worked though.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they were lucky to have Mutt Lange. I think, everybody sort of acknowledges that, but that's not to take anything away from the talent of the guys. I mean, they're obviously, really great, extremely talented songwriters and musicians. So in the case of, you know, there are exceptions to those rules, but I think, and it's similar when you're actually, recording in the studio as well. It's often those early takes or, first ideas when you're writing a song, it's those first initial gut instinct ideas that will often be the gems that'll stand the test of time, you know?
Well, I suppose as you work more in the industry and get better, do you feel like your gut maybe, gets smarter along the way?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of with anything, you know, usually your experience will fuel, a quicker understanding of what's good and what's not good, which is why it's great to have a producer who's experienced, somebody who can be another ear on the outside to say, yeah, that's a good idea or no, you know, sadly, it seems like in the case of most people can do that with their work, but they can't always do that with their personal life.
That's fascinating. That's, you know, I feel like I've been underneath the learning tree. You have so many insights and the experience to back it up and well thought out, well spoken. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you. It's just called old.
We,
oh my God.
We know what it's like to be old, don't we?
Yeah. It happens.
That's right. But see, I'm smarter for it.
You know, it's like I said, you seem to get, it's a process, this whole thing, you know. You beat down, you get back up, and you know, different things, you know, at some point, hopefully you figure all of it out before you get too old to enjoy all of the experience that encompasses, you know, every aspect of your life, you know. And if you're lucky, I envy those people that figured out every angle from a young age and they were able to, grow from there. Instead of being a little, reckless with certain areas of life, which I think a lot of us have as well, you know, and it is what it is, you know, that's what we're here for, to grow and learn, right?
Yeah.
Second you stop learning, that's when you stop living, really.
It's so true. Yeah. Absolutely.
I know we're almost at a time. I wanted to ask, just about like, how much of the business of like Starbreaker and your bands do you take care of now?
Well, I'm kind of a control freak. From the standpoint of I just it makes me insane when someone can decide what anything from how to mix the sound of my voice. I want to have something to say about the musical aspect of what I do, but I also want to have something to say about, you know, what picture is being chosen to promote or what, if it comes down to doing a video, for example, or, you know, all these things, you know, how the whole thing is presented is of utmost importance to me. I wish I had a manager who was so professional that they just kind of instinctively knew all the right things to do, which was more the case when we were kids, you know, and we were with a big major label. They did so many of the right things that we could sort of, and they did a lot of things that, you know, we should have been more on top of and had more, had our hands in it more, you know, but, I like to be, I like to, you know, I don't always get to say everything I want to say, and it frustrates me. And sometimes the label doesn't want to spend money on X, Y, or Z, which is very frustrating when you know that if they did, it would only be that much better for the album. But the things I can control, I try to the best I can.
I feel like labels might have come to you with some crazy promotion ideas or video ideas back in the day where you went, are you serious?
Well, the famous, for people who are hardcore TNT fans, the famous funny thing was the first initial video for 10,000 Lovers, which they actually, I thought it had been buried. And when VH1 started that classic, what was that show called that they played all the old song? Was it Metal? Come on, guys. Help
yeah,
me out.
You know, I know what you're, it's on the tip of my tongue.
None of us, seriously, none of us can think of it.
We're Canadians. It was on.
Yeah.
Come on.
And I know that, I absolutely saw it. It was.
Anyway, it was classic. It was on VH1 Classic, and it was a metal video thing that would play all the old videos. Well, that video reemerged, and they obviously had it on file, and somebody probably grabbed it. Maybe they knew, maybe they didn't know. And it started to get played, and I was like, oh, my God. And, of course, the hardcore fans loved it. They were eating it up, you know. But when we first delivered it to MTV, the MTV was like, no, we can't play this. So we actually were forced to do a second video in London, which became the video most people know the song, you know, that goes with the song.
Metal Mania, was that it?
That might be it. Yeah, I think that is it. Good job. Did you look it up?
No, I didn't. It was just bugging the hell out of me because I know it.
Yeah,
I'll admit I was trying to look it up.
Well, you know, that's the thing. That's one good thing is when we get brain farts now, we can just grab our phone, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's the only way. In some cases, it's the only way you wind up with a brain. So it's
incredible. Like, I'll find myself talking to people and, you know, you're talking about, like, let's say a movie or something. And you think of, like, the most famous actors in the world. Like, there's some actor that's in, you know, that you say their name all the time, or it's always in your head, or they're always. But right when you want to talk about it, you can't think of it. And then it's like a contagious thing. Like if one person at the table, just like what happened to us right now, if one person can't think of the name, everybody at the table no one can think of the name. And you inevitably have to look it up. And then when you say it, it's somebody like, you know, it's Johnny Depp or Tom Cruise or some huge actor that no one could, you know, it's insane.
You know, I think it's comedian Lewis Black who said, you know, people of his generation had conversations, and the next generation, they just do research.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we should, I've gone over our time with you already, so I hope there's not somebody else waiting after. And,
have another one, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It means we're having a good time. And, like I say, it'd be great. One more time, just go plug the album, please. Tell everybody where to pick it up, when it's out, and why it's awesome.
Well, the album, it's Starbreaker is the band, and the album's called Dysphoria, out on Frontiers Records on January 25th. And they can check out the first two singles, Pure Evil and How Many More Goodbyes, which are up on YouTube now. And the video for Wild Butterflies, the next single, that'll be released the day of the album on the 25th as well. And you should get it because it's awesome. And if you're a fan of mine or just a fan of really good, melodic, hard-hitting, thoughtful rock, this is a great, I'm sure you'll love it.
Well, I can second that emotion. You know, it's an excellent album. I think that this is my favorite Starbreaker album. And I look forward to listening to it again and again.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to hear you sing Second That Emotion now. I think you killed it. Now I'm I mean, I remember in Morning Wood, you sang that Marvin Gaye song, the What's Going On.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty great. Let's hear some Motown from you all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. But, but you know, a lot of things that might surprise people, I'd like to do before I'm done. So,
well, we hope it's a long time before you're done. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Tony Harnell, all the best. Starbreaker, Dysphoria, January 25th. Buy the album.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Tony. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
She's giving